Okay, I've been hanging around these rooms for a few days, and when I first came out, I remember coming to a few meetings up here in North Tampa, and while in treatment, I remember seeing this woman in meetings way back then, and I always remembered that she always had something quite moving to share, or something that I remember, and that she came out of the book, which is something that I really like. And with that, with all her friends here tonight, I present Diane. Yay!
Some of her friends.
All.
She's got to cast her thousands.
Thank you, Toby, for asking me to speak. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here tonight. I'm a little bit shaky, so please bear with me. It's only the beginning of, you know, when you go in front of a bunch of people. And I usually start shaking, but it's okay. I'll get right back with it. my name is Diane, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Diane.
This is a pretty small group, so I would kind of like if everybody would just say their name so I can feel like I'm with friends, you know, if you just tell me your name, and I told you mine. Dear.
Earl. Reggie. Shane.
Mike.
Dan. Ricardo.
Judy. Lori.
Ricky.
Jeffy.
Laura.
Terry.
Anthony.
Lisa.
Johnny.
Alex.
Toby.
Zia.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Now I feel more like I'm a group. My sobriety date is April the 10th, 2002. I'm really looking forward to sharing my story, but just to let you know at the very beginning, I was a very late bloomer. I didn't start drinking until I was like 25 years old. But from that time on, I drank and drugged till I was 58 years old. So I've been doing it for a while. I'd like to start off with my childhood because that's where most of my alcohol traits, now that I look back on them, I can see that I was headed to be an alcoholic. But before we do that, you know, some people have family portraits, and I happen to have a portrait of my family, and they got all dressed up for that. And if you don't recognize me, I'm the second one on the end next to the little boy that's got the hat. I'll pass it around and let everybody see it. I just thought it was kind of funny. And the way I'm dressed there is the way that I normally was dressed, which is their underwear. So anyway, okay, let me see. Like I said, I was a late bloomer, so I lived with my grandparents from the time I was about that age till about 16, and then me and my mother got a home of our own. My father got killed 2 days before I turned 8, and it was related to alcohol. I was surrounded by alcoholics when I was growing up, so I knew something wasn't right in my family, but I also knew that I didn't want to be like them. And I always swore, I will never drink, I'll never drink, but it doesn't always happen that way. I'm going to just tell you a few of the things I did as a child, showing you how alcoholic I was. A long time ago, when I was a teenager, we used to wear circle skirts with crinolines under them, you know. And I was a little thief from the beginning. My grandmother would send me to this little store around the corner, and the lady that owned the store knew my grandparents, and she would give her a six-pack of beer, and I would walk home like this because I couldn't carry it. I was so little. But also while I was there, I would go down the aisle and put candy in my shirt. So anyway, my grandfather found out about it, and he was furious. But that was just one of the things. Then I had another little girlfriend that lived around the corner from me, and her father was an attorney, and he would give her a quarter every day for candy. And I was so jealous, you know, that she had money for candy. So I would go in my grandmother's purse, and I would take out a few little change, you know. That was after I got caught stealing candy. So the lady really watched me close. So anyway, one day there was a half a dollar in there, and she kept close tabs on her money because she wanted to make sure she had enough to drink. So she, I took the half a dollar, and I knew I was going to get caught. I mean, I knew, but I didn't care. So anyway, I took it, and sure enough, my mother got home from work, and my grandmother told her that I took that, and she put me in the car, and she was going to take me to a home for little girls that stole it. And that was pretty earth-shaking for me. I really got scared. Anyway, long story short, these are just silly little things that happened, but I had a bunch of girlfriends when I was like 14. There was like five of us that hang around together. And I decided that I wanted all of us to have matching shirts. So for Christmas, I went shopping. And I got five shirts. They all were the same, and I put them under my crinoline and walked out of the store with them. So we all had matching shirts. So then one other time, my mother's birthday was coming up, and I didn't have money to buy her a cake or anything, so I went to the grocery store, and I put the cake mix in between my legs, and I walked out. But this one time that I went and got these shirts for all the girls, I was so excited because I wanted to give everybody a gift. So I, you know, there was boxes, it was like Woolworths, and how they had their little displays on the end. So I got a box of stationery for my mother. And I went home and I was real excited and I wrapped all the presents and put them under the tree. Christmas morning, I'd already given all my girlfriends their shirts. And Christmas morning, my mom opens her present and I'm sitting there, you know, just so excited. She opens it and she pulls out this, you know, those little blow things that the kids use in the pool with the Donald Duck head on them? That's what was in the box. And I looked, she looked and she goes, "What is this?" And I thought it was stationery, you know, so, oh, that was just a joke. I was just joking. I didn't really, you know, but I got, you know, that's how I got caught doing that. I hope I didn't break it. When I was younger, I used to go all around the neighborhood, and I never wanted to go home because my family, like I said, they drank, so they would tell me I had to be home before dark. And I used to have a little girlfriend that lived around the corner from me and her kind of grew up together. And she was going to be a school teacher. And I didn't know what I wanted to do or what I wanted to be. But anyway, she got killed when she was 15 years old. And it was pretty bad. I was in the church, and my grandfather was a policeman, so he was pretty strict. And I lived with my grandmother, my grandfather, and two uncles. And one uncle was in the Army, the other one was in the Marine Corps. And the one that was in the Marine Corps, I knew the Marine Corps him before I knew anything. And I had to do sit-ups and push-ups in the morning. And he was pretty hard on me. So I would go around the neighborhood and I would take toys that I had, dolls and and I would give them to the little girls in the neighborhood so they would play with me. I know I'm jumping all over the place, but sorry about that. There was one little girl that lived around the block from me, and she was probably around 8 or 9, and she was Jewish, and her parents gave her a really big birthday party. Usually it was, you know, you had hot dogs and hamburgers, and I knew better than to ask for money to buy a present. So I really racked my brain trying to figure out what I was going to give her as a gift. And I went into my underwear closet, underwear drawer, and I picked out 3 of the cleanest pair of underwear that I could find. And they were just cotton underwear, you know, they didn't even have any lace on them or nothing. So I wrapped them in toilet paper, and I used that white tape that they used to use when people were, you know. And I wish I could have known what her parents must have thought when she opened that gift. I mean, it was just, I just knew I had to have something to take in there, and I didn't want to go empty-handed. And that was the best thing I could find to get, you know. But it's terrible to know that you can't go and ask for money or anything like that, because, and we weren't poverty, but we weren't really, really high class, you know. So my upbringing was a little brutal. My grandfather was a very strict, you know, those big black thick belts that policemen carry or wear. He would take me in the room every time I was home late. And, you know, some of the things they did when I was small, if people did it nowadays, they'd be put in jail for it. So, I mean, it didn't warp me by any way. I just promised myself that when I had children, I would at least explain to them why they were getting spanked and not just because I'm the mommy. And it was pretty sad because I could never bring anybody in my house, you know, so that's why I was always out on the road, always. Nobody knew where I was at or anything, but if I wasn't there by dark, then I had to choke my dinner down and know that I was going to get my puppy. So anyway, let me see, okay. Enough of when I was little. I adjusted pretty good in school because what I did, what a counselor told me what I did was, instead of, you know, concentrating on the abuse and stuff that I had when I was younger, I laughed and I smiled and I made jokes. And that was like my way of protecting myself. So I had a lot of girlfriends in school, and the counselor said, you could have been a serial killer, you know, because she said, but I don't believe that, I don't believe. I know I did one thing that really bothered me from the time I was a little girl till I became an adult. And I had a little dog named Sunshine, and he was my little sweetheart. And my mother could never spank me if he was around because he would, you know, try to bite her. And when my parents or my grandparents and everybody would, like, you know, I would be getting in trouble and stuff, they would have to lock him outside because, you know, well, one day I went outside and I was so angry and furious, and the way it was explained to me, I couldn't take out my anger on the adults, so I took him outside and I held him by his tail like that. And I grabbed him and started crying, and I asked the counselor, I said, why did I do that to something that I love so much? And she said, well, because you couldn't attack the adults, so instead you attacked him. But I didn't, you know, that stayed with me for so many years. I know it sounds stupid, but it really was a very traumatic thing for me. Okay, well, we'll move on now. My mother got married twice after my dad died. Both stepfathers were alcoholics. The first one was probably 6 or 7, and he would drive the car. We used to go fishing a lot, on a canal, and he would pull up to the canal and stop right there on the end, and it would terrify me, and he thought that was so funny. And then he would drive around and go around the corner real fast, and I'd go flying out the door. Luckily, there was sand, but anyway, just different things to terrorize me. My mother never got married again until I was in high school. And I was 19. And he was a wife beater, and she didn't know that. She worked in a grocery store, in a prepack store, and he was a butcher there. And it wasn't long before she found out that he had a gun, and he used to threaten her with it. So one time he kept her car and sent her to work, and he stayed home for 3 days drinking. And for some reason, he was afraid of me, because I told him if I ever found out he was hurting my mother, I'd have him put under the jail. And obviously, he was scared of me. So anyway, this one night she called me, and it was my last night at work. I had been accepted by National Airlines to become a stewardess, and I was really excited about that. And she called me, and she said, "Will you please go home with me? You know, Charlie's got my car, and I'm going to get my stuff and go over to my grandparents' house." And I said, "Well, I got to work till 9. And she said, "Well, that's okay. I'll wait." So I followed her home, and he was sitting in the living room in a rocking chair, and he was drinking. He had a six-pack of beer in between his legs, and he was drinking. And I walked in. I just opened the door, and I didn't go all the way in. I saw that he was really drunk. And I was so mad, because he had piled my mother, her car, all the way up to the ceiling with all her clothes. And it was our house. And he was moving her stuff into her car. So I just went over, and I started grabbing stuff out of the car and throwing it in the door, and she'd pick it up and go put it in away. And after we got it unloaded, then I told her, I said, "Okay, now get a box. We're going to put his stuff in his car." So we started doing that, and I told her, I said, "You know, Charlie's got a gun. Do you know where it's at?" She had no idea. So we went in the bedroom, and we packing stuff, and we're looking for the gun. And we got all the stuff in the car, and I looked in the glove compartment and the trunk and everything. He's still sitting in the living room drinking, laughing as we're walking back and forth. And my boyfriend at the time came over, and I was smoking. I had quit, and he was so furious with me that he just said, "I'm going to Zayre's and get some parts for my car." And he said, I told him, I said, "Don't go. Charlie's got a gun." "Oh, he ain't gonna do nothing with that gun." So he left, and I told Charlie he needed to get in the car and leave, or we were gonna call the police. And we argued with him for a little bit, and finally he got in the car. And he had the door open, and I was standing there, and he had my mom's keys to her car. And I said, "I want my mom's keys to the car." And he says, "I'm not going to give them to you." So I started letting air out of his tires. I said, "If you don't give me the keys, I'm going to flatten your tires and call the police." So anyway, I leaned in, and you know, when you're 19 years old, you don't think anything is going to happen. So I told him, I said, "Let me see what you got in your pocket." So he pulled his pocket out, and he had a bunch of change. I said, "Okay, let me see what you got in your other pocket." He did the same thing. And I leaned over, and I said, "What do you got in your shirt pocket?" And he pulled out the keys. And in the meantime, we hadn't found the gun yet, so we knew it was somewhere. So he pulls the keys and started dangling them in front of me. And I lunged for him, and when I did, he went in this pocket, and he pulled out a gun, and he shot it, and it went by my leg. And then the second one hit me right above my heart. and then the third one lodged in the gut. So I was in shock, and I had on a white uniform because I had been working at a grocery store. So there was a little bit of blood, not a lot, because it was a little 22 and it didn't go all the way through. It just, but it was like 3 inches above my heart. And they called ahead to the hospital, and they had a lung specialist there at the time. What had happened is it had gone in and hit a rib, punctured my lung, and came out, or just got almost to the where it came out on the surface. So when they called in, they had a lung surgeon there. And as soon as I went into the emergency room, they took a tube. At the time, I guess this is 40-something years ago, they had little tubes with holes in them, and they would actually put it in and to pull the fluid out of your lungs. But he straddled it. I had never been in the hospital for anything. I never even had a stitch. You know, so I had no idea. So he straddled me, and he punched that thing in my chest. He cut me 3 times before, you know, the tube went in. And I screamed, and my parents, my grandparents and my cousin and them were out in the hallway. And they didn't even know it was me, because the doctor told my mother. I didn't believe that she had that much air left in her lungs. Anyway, that's the traumatic thing that happened to me when I was a teenager. So I didn't really drink anything until, I met a guy in the hospital who was an oxygen therapist as I was in there for a month. And he used to come in and read the Bible to me and talk to me and everything. So we got real close, and I ended up, when I got out of the hospital, we ended up getting married, and he was an oxygen therapist. But what I didn't know was he was gay, and I was only 20 at the time, and man, I thought there was something really bad wrong with me, because he had 2 jobs and he never was home. And anyway, he talked me into going up to Pennsylvania. He said he had a job up there at a hospital. And when we got up there, he was going with this guy that was a radiologist. Him and they were friends. And we had a little apartment there, and he went off to a convention, but I thought he had to go, but he was only going because this guy was going, you know? So when he got back from his trip, I was all excited. I ran up to kiss him, and he just kind of turned his head away. And I didn't know what was going on. And finally, when we got home, he told me, he said, "I don't want to be married anymore." So anyway, I was stuck in Pennsylvania, and I had never been away from home before. So I thought, well, I can do this. I can drive home. I had my car, and I had a job waiting for me at a grocery store. So I headed off back to Miami, and my uncle met me partway. I think it was close to Washington, and he helped me drive the rest of the way. And we went over that bridge like 3 times, you know. And he says, "That's okay. We'll just take our time. Don't worry about it. We're not in any rush." But anyway, when I got home, I was pretty traumatic. You know, I had had nightmares for almost 2 years after I got shot, and then for this to happen was, you know. So there was a guy that had asked me to marry him before all this happened, and I didn't really like him that much, so I ended up marrying Fred instead. Okay, now this is husband number 2. This is the man that I had my children from. I have 2 beautiful children. I have 9 grandchildren and 5.5 great-grandchildren. So I'm very blessed, and everybody's healthy and good, and you know, I'm hoping and praying to God that my disease doesn't go down to their generation. But I was married to him for 12 years. I did drink. I started drinking at his friend's house when we first started going to this couple's house, and she would make me these tutti-frutti drinks, you know, with the the Lumbrel, and I really, really liked them, you know. But I knew I wasn't going to get, you know, I didn't get drunk or anything. But that gave me the taste for them, you know. So anyway, I was married to him for 12 years, and there was a lot of, when we would go out and stuff, I would drink, and I would get pretty snobby. But if we go to a party, I would end up in the bedroom asleep, and he would think I was out with somebody else out. He was extremely jealous, so that didn't last too long. I was there 12 years, and then we got a divorce. So then I met another guy, and this came to be my third husband. His name was Rusty, and I met him in a bar. And he was a real alcoholic. So probably more so than anything that I had really witnessed at home, because he threw things and, you know, was pretty violent when he got drunk. So when I was married to him, I decided somebody had said something about AA. Of course, I was going to go to AA for him. At the time, I was drinking just as much as he was drinking. But I was going to help him get better. So I went to an AA meeting, and it was a closed meeting. And they let me stay. And all I remember at that, I was like 32, 33 years old. All I remember them saying was, "You can never drink again." And that's all I needed to hear. I was never going to go back to AA. So anyway, I didn't come to the program until I was in my, like I said, 58. So I drank and drugged for over 30 years. Okay, then I got divorced from Rusty, and I met my fourth husband in a bar. That's the best place to go if you want to meet a cowboy, you know. And he was a cowboy. So we were together for 25 years, and we drank and drugged together for 25 years. And I was at work one day, and I told my supervisor to, you know, and when I said it to her, to all the people in the credit union, and all the my coworkers. And I never drank at work, but when I went into work, I was, you know, I had a hangover, and everybody was against me, and nobody understood me, and, you know, I'd been there for 25 years, and I got this little 25-year-old telling me what to do, and I hated her. But she was a real controlling person. And she really knew how to push my button. So anyway, I told her to get fucked. So it was said very loudly, and everybody heard it, so they immediately took me to the back room, and they already knew that something was going on. Luckily, I never got drug tested. They drug tested me one time, and that was when they first started. But I played Russian roulette for my job, because I could have been drug tested at any moment. And the booze might not have showed up, but the marijuana would definitely have showed up. So, thank God I never got anything happen like that, because I wouldn't have a pension right now, and I'd be living on probably $1,000 a month, which doesn't go very far. But they told me I had a choice of either going to a 2-week outpatient type thing, and the credit union paid for it, and the people were great. I mean, they encouraged us to go to AA meetings, but I wouldn't go. And finally they said, okay, you have got to go to AA meetings, or, you know, we're not going to let you out of this program, or we're not going to let you go back to work. So I was so blessed, because it was lifted for me immediately. I mean, drugs, drinking, everything. It just was lifted. I prayed about it. I didn't really know a lot about my higher power at the time, but I know that I prayed and prayed and prayed that it would be lifted from me, and I wouldn't have the desire to drink or smoke or anything again. So that's how I got introduced into AA. I can't stand up here and tell you that the first 2 years were really enlightening for me, because first of all, I went to a meeting, went home, I got there, left, didn't say anything to anybody. By the way, my husband was still drinking at home. So the program did tell me, you know, you've got to go to meetings, you can't go, you know. I'd go home and he was drinking, so I'd just get up and I'd go to a meeting. And that's what I did for about a year and a half. I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't, you know, present myself as a newcomer or anything. All I kept hearing was, you know, how loving and caring everybody was, and they were kissing everybody. But it was me, it wasn't the program. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't giving myself at all. And finally I got a hold of this. It was very difficult, like 10 years ago, to get a woman sponsor. I don't know if there's other women in here, but if any of them are like my age, at the time, there was plenty of guy sponsors, but no women sponsors. There was one woman, Marie, and she had like 5 sponsees, you know, because it just was real difficult. I finally got this one lady, and she was a nurse, and she started sponsoring me, and I learned a lot in the 2 years that I went. Even though I didn't get a sponsor, I mean, I went to meetings. I went to 3 meetings a day sometimes. And I learned so much about AA, plus the desire had been taken away from me, so I was really skating around and I was doing okay, but I could have done so much better, so I would never recommend anybody to ever come in and not get a sponsor right away. Because a sponsor is your lifeline. And I got this little lady and she was great. And after she sponsored me for probably about 2 weeks, I remember her telling me that I was selfish and self-centered, and that really pissed me off. But I didn't feel like I was selfish. I thought I was a good, you know, take care of everybody. Anyway, about a week after that, she came to me and she said, "I can't be your sponsor anymore." And I said, "Why? What did I do?" She said, "No, you didn't do anything." She said, "I went out." She had had an injury and she started doing pills. So then here I am now, I'm trying to find another sponsor, and I didn't know who to go to. It tells you in the program, if you're a man, go to a man sponsor. If you're a woman, go to a woman sponsor. And like I said, there were hardly any women. So there was this one guy that, I won't give his anonymity away, but he was a real big book thumper, and I just thought, well, that's what I need, somebody that's really going to be hard on me and, you know, teach me about this program. Well, all the time that I was with him, all I did was sit and cry, because he would tell me things like, okay, you've got to get rid of people, places, and things. And that's all he would say. I mean, there was no explanation, no... I'm saying, "What are you talking about? You know, people, places, and things." And I'd say, "No, I don't know." And I went to my psychiatrist and I was telling her about it, and she said, "You need to get another sponsor." And, you know, for me to get a guy sponsor was stupid anyway. But I didn't know any better, you know. And I really, really wanted this program bad. I really did. So I finally ended up getting another sponsor, and then when I did, I started really meshing in the program and, you know, identifying with other women and going out to coffee with other women and talking to other women, and before I knew it, we had a Monday night meeting that I could not wait to get to that meeting. Every Monday night it was a woman's meeting. Well, let me tell you something. At the beginning, they told me that this disease kills. And I didn't see it. But the first year that I was in this program and I went to this woman's meeting, 5 women died. And they were all alcoholic related. That scared me. It really did, because now I understand what they mean. You know, jails, institutions, and you could drive and kill somebody in a car, but I just really never put the two together. It never really, you know, you feel like you're to that door. You never think that it's going to happen to you, you know. But the more you're in the program and the more you hear about people having car accidents and killing people and, you know, young people that are kill another person and go to jail. And I have a very healthy respect now for AA and Alcoholics Anonymous for that reason. Because since then, there has been many, many, many women and men that have died since I've been in the program. But I just can't express enough how very critical this program is that we get it. And I have, since I've gotten my sponsor and been able to move into the program and really get my teeth into it, I've had the privilege of starting to sponsor women. And to me, there's nothing more rewarding than to watch another alcoholic start growing and then turn around and then they start sponsoring. This program is the most wonderful thing that's ever happened to me in my life. I have such a beautiful life. I'm retired. I can sleep in till 10 o'clock if I want to, sometimes 11. But all my other ladies that I hang with get up real early in the morning, but they don't call me before 10. But that was one of my dreams, if I ever retired, that I could sleep in every night, every morning. But I want to talk a little bit about the program. I'm not a big book thumper. I don't know a lot of different quotes and stuff. I hear them all the time in the program, and I always seem to hear exactly what I need to hear, no matter what meeting I go to. And sometimes I walk in a meeting and I'm not really doing that great, and I walk out and I'm walking on a cloud. I really am, because it's almost like they're talking to me at that meeting. It's something that I really, really needed to hear. And it's just, it's not a coincidence. I really believe it's a gift from God, this program. I'd like to read a little thing for you. That is what learning is. You suddenly understand something you've understood all your life, but in a new way. As we are changed by our experiences, that which we know also changes. Our experiences foster growth and enlightenment, and all awareness give way to a new understanding. We are forever students of life, blessed with particular lessons designed only for us. There is a joy in knowing that learning has no end, and that each day offers us a chance to move closer to becoming the person we are meant to be. To understand something more deeply requires that we be open to the ideas of others, willing to part with our personal opinion. The program offers us many opportunities to trade in the understanding we've outgrown. Throughout our recovery, we have discovered new interceptions of old ideas, and we will continue to expand our understanding. Every situation, every person, every feeling, every idea has a slightly different hue to each time we encounter it. The wonder of this is that life is forever enriched, forever fresh. Every moment offers me a chance to know better who I am and to understand more fully the real contribution that is mine to make in this life. I will let the anticipation of my changing ideas excite me. And when I read that, I felt like it was talking about AA, about how we can be excited and experience all the changes that we do in this program. And I just know that the 12 steps have definitely changed my life. When you're in the program and you get a sponsor, it's always a good idea to do the steps as soon as possible. It will definitely put you into the program and let you understand more about what it's all about. We don't have to do anything perfectly. We just do the best we can do, and that's what I do. And I pray every day that God will give me the strength and courage to be able to go on and help other women as well as men, but mostly other women that are in my life. I have, as my roommate tells me, I have a posse that we all hang around together. And it's awesome. You know, we go places together, we experience things, we laugh together, we cry together. We're going to be burying one of our sisters this week. And it's pretty sad because she was very young. But the wonderful thing about it is she was sober. And she was doing what she loved to do. She was riding her bike. And we're all going to go celebrate her life. But, and it wasn't alcoholic related. So, you know, it was, God wanted her. So he took her. So we can go by and remember all the things that she did, because she had an awesome, awesome program. Had a lot of women. She helped a lot of women. She went to institutions and jails, and she just gave her heart to this program. So I hope that I can live up to even close to what she was. And I really and truly appreciate you letting me share. I know I got a little off kilter there and did a couple crazy things. This is what I looked like when I was 19 when I got shot. So anyway, I just thought I would bring a couple pictures. Thank you so much.
Absolutely beautiful photo.
Can I see that?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely stunning.
She's absolutely beautiful.
Thank you, Diane. Wonderful story. You covered it all. Thank you.
Thank you very much.